All right, so we are in CSD world.
Hey.
Hey, John, how are you?
I'm doing well.
So go ahead and introduce yourself to people, don't know you.
I'm John.
Yeah. John Schuchuk, technical fellow, Microsoft.
Geek, yeah.
Geek, for sure. Yeah.
That's funny. Dennis Pellegrinos, I'm
the
a program manager.
Time,
yeah. Yeah, exactly. I'm a program manager. I work in the Connexus division. I work on something we call .NET Services.
Excellent. So what are these? What is it?
So it might be worth taking just a quick step back and looking at the whole big picture, which is we're announcing this big, cool new thing called Azure. And is that the way we say it?
Azure.
Nobody knows. It's secret. But it's what we're doing is we're taking a lot of the technologies we've been developing over the last several years here at Microsoft, and we're putting them out in the cloud so that they're much, much easier for people to use, to scale, to have a reliable system without having to set up, install, maintain, upgrade, all of that kind of stuff. All of this technology becomes available as very easy to use web services that you can call from Java, that you can call from PHP or Ruby, and from .NET.
Yep.
Imagine that, yeah.
Excellent.
So that's the big picture. Mm-hmm. And then within that, we've got a couple different pieces. Down at the bottom, we got Windows Azure. And then above that, we've got a whole bunch of services like .NET services, which we've been working on, the live services, the cloud,
SQL services,
and then we've got new stuff like the CRM and SharePoint services coming online.
Excellent.
Yeah.
So let's dig a little bit into this. I mean, it's really nice that you said, okay, so it's really easy to take what used to be client applications that you'd install on your machine, and all of a sudden we have these cloud versions. What exactly is going on? What have you guys built
to
be able to say this?
Yeah, we've built three services within the .NET services that we're going to be launching at PDC. The three names are Service Bus, Access Control, and Workflow. And the Service Bus allows you to do a secure NAT firewall traversal. Access Control allows you to describe assets that you want to protect and use a cloud service to actually get claims and protect those assets and secure them effectively.
Okay.
And then Workflow is just a very simple workflow service out that allows you to run long-running workflows out in the cloud. So we built the whole scale-out solution for you, some pretty cool tool integration. You just stick a workflow out in the cloud, and it runs for as long as you need it to.
Interesting. So do you want to draw pictures?
Sure.
Pictures of fun.
Yeah. So, you know, one of the cool things that Don Box and Chris Anderson are going to be showing are they've got a service that they showed at the last PDC, actually, which is it lists the set of processes you've got on a machine. And they showed how you can attach a web service interface to that thing, and then you can go control and look at the processes. And one of the messages that you can send at this thing, besides get the list, is you can kill a process. And that's a pretty cool thing. You can expose that as web services. But there's a number of challenges that people would face if they just wanted to use this thing for it as a general purpose system. For example, you might have the particular machine running behind a firewall at home or in a corporation. And so with a couple easy changes to the configuration of this application, we can project that thing out, connect it to the cloud, and expose a public endpoint for that so that it can be accessed from anywhere. And that's kind of the first idea, which is this notion of the service bus that Dennis talked about. The service bus gives us a general purpose way to ensure connectivity for applications no matter where they are. The other key thing is that if you think about this, just this little simple app, you wouldn't want anybody to call the kill service. You want to just make sure that your friends or business partners or whatever, and so that's where the access control service comes in. And what the access control service does is it, in this case, it's working with the service bus, and it's going to provide a set of rules about who's allowed to make this call. And so this combination of the service bus and access control gives you a great way to stitch together applications, kind of no matter where they are, devices, across NATs and firewalls, across corporations. And it does the service bus does all kinds of cool stuff, like it'll translate HTTP requests into NAT firewall traversal things. It'll support PubSub and fanout.
So it's a pretty rich piece of functionality. In a lot of ways, it's like what corporations do today with an enterprise service bus. Think of it as an internet service bus that's hosted out in the cloud, and think of the access control as a sort of like a Tivoli or a TAM or an AD that's automatically available to you, and you can put them together and build applications. So those are the
really
first,
cool.
first two. That's mm-hmm. the service bus and the access control. The other one Dennis talked about was this notion of a workflow service. And the idea there is you can define some business process. You know, maybe you'll check some logic, and you can throw some events, put that thing in a loop. So there's a simple workflow that might monitor to make sure your services are up and running. And in the event that the service isn't up and running, it could notify you by email or maybe raising another event on the service bus that other applications can then connect into. So those are the three major pieces of technology we're introducing in .NET services.
At this first release.
Yep.
Very cool.
Yeah. Should we actually walk through what it's going to look like? Should we disclose Dawn? Or I guess people have already seen this at this point, right?
Sure.
Let's just see what somebody like what it looks like if somebody wants to go access this
yes.
thing. So we have a process here. This process, and I haven't talked to Dawn about this, so this might change by the time you guys see it, but we'll see. So we have this process here, and this thing is enumerating on my machine all the processes that exist there. So here I am outside, and I want to go and take a look at the processes here. In order to do that, I'm going to first go and talk to the service bus at a location. So it's going to be at some location here. You know, whatever it is, process list. And I'm going to see all the processes that are running here. So I might see something like windows update.exe and, you know, our favorite SVC host.exe, a bunch of these different things. So in order for me to see that, even just to see it, the first thing that somebody's going to want to do is protect this asset, basically. Mm-hmm. They're not going to say anybody can go and access this, right?
Sure.
So in order to hit this thing, I'm going to need to go to the access control system and prove who I am, right? So this endpoint is protected by this access control system. Once I prove who I am, I then provide it to them, and they say, okay, go ahead and use it. So they're able to actually say, you know, for all these different verbs, list or kill or, you know, even maybe let's say run or add, you're going to want to be able to, you know, very declaratively be able to say, here are the things that you can do as long as you're this person. So you can, you know, compose both the service bus and access control system against the asset which is sitting on that computer.
Hmm.
So this is an example of somebody how somebody might use this.
Really interesting.
And you could use one of the fun things about these little building blocks is there's all kinds of stuff you could go build with it. You know, we've got people who are taking these pieces and they're building, for example, a home video viewing system. So you can have a video recorder on your computer. It's connected up to, say, cable.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sitting there behind your NAT at home. And then to watch videos from, say, your hotel room, they connect through the service bus, it connects in through the firewall, and now you're able to show the videos. People are building, for example, help desk applications where you might have people that are out on the road and they want to be able to communicate to people back in the office, to other mobile workers. They can find the list of chat rooms and the other users through the service registry capabilities of the service bus, and then the service bus provides that connectivity to make sure it all happens. And I mean, one of the really interesting things about what we've been able to do is bring together some very powerful software that runs on the machines that are in people's offices or mm-hmm. on their mobile device and really make the communication efficient. So, for example, we talked about video streaming from home. That doesn't actually traverse our service bus once the video gets started. It just goes directly from the video recorder behind the firewall directly out to the customer's machine because we are able to securely open a hole in the firewall. The access control service and the service bus all work together to make that happen. So NAT is, you know, in a way, this thing becomes this very useful set of tools that many startups today that are going off and building applications have to devote a lot of time and energy to figuring out how to do directories and how to get their messaging to happen. In a sense, it's like a little internet startup in a box. It gives you a lot of the key pieces that you would need to go build modern distributed applications.
Excellent. And you provide a pretty simple API for developers.
Yeah. So our SDK is actually quite comprehensive. We have both C# and VB samples as part of the SDK that you get to download. Mm-hmm. And then we're planning of having Java and Ruby samples as well that you can actually go and play with. So you can, from any one of these languages, go and interact with these services.
Cool. So let's put this in perspective with the puzzle that you basically outlaid earlier with Red Dog, which is no longer called Red Dog, of course, it's Windows Azure, on the bottom as the operating system.
Yeah.
You guys riding on top as the services layer. How do you interact with Azure? And can you talk about that?
Well, the whole thing we think of as Azure. And then kind of in the bottom, we've got Windows Azure, which is really a great place to run programs, to store bits, and so on. So you can think of that like, in a sense, a kernel or a core mm-hmm. of a new cloud operating system. So that was kind of the intuition behind this idea of calling it Windows. And then on top of this, we've got all of these different kinds of services. So, for example, we've been just talking about the .NET services. Mm-hmm. And we're going to have more than just the three we talked about, but those are the ones that were shown at the PDC.
Sure.
Then we've got, for example, the SQL services. And those things give you structured databases, query, reporting, lots of great stuff there. We've got the live services. Those things give you things like device management so that you can have collections of mobile devices and PCs and make them very user-centric, so you can have a user know about their devices, know about their storage, know about their friends, all through a nice, easy programming model. And then finally, we're going to be introducing lots and lots of additional capabilities into Azure over time. Mm-hmm. So collectively, we see this as a great new set of building blocks for people to put together applications. This is where you can run code, do your storage, and then all of these higher-level services just bump up the abstraction layer and kind of give you fabrics mm-hmm. of capability that run across a distributed set of nodes all around the world. It's a pretty interesting new kind of development.
Absolutely. Cloud OS.
Cloud OS.
That's really what it is. So as far as the services go, nothing's really going to stop somebody from writing their own chunk right on there. It's extensible. Windows.
I expect third parties will do a lot of these things.
Yeah.
Take advantage of the capabilities down here and all of these things. And one of the interesting things is that the whole system is very loosely coupled. So, for example, we both take advantage of each other. There's really not one of these things on top between these. So, for example, account information or the rules in the identity service, the access control service over here, are actually stored in the SQL services. And to get access to the SQL services, you use the access control service to gate and control information. Mm. So we've got these things all kind of work together like an operating system does.
Excellent. I mean, that's actually a great point, because for a while we've been talking just about the individual pieces.
But
and
they
the fact
all...
that they work together.
Yeah.
Of course. So let's talk a little bit. I mean, you're a technical fellow. I mean, you're hanging out with other technical fellows, banging through, figuring how to do this.
Actually, I hang out with these guys.
I wish you would hang out more with technical fellows.
Oh.
No, he does actually hang out with us quite a bit.
Good.
We've been working on this project for, two and a half years?
Yeah.
Thereabouts. So John, myself, and a guy named David Wartendike started this little box a while ago.
Yeah, well, there was this other guy, Grinnell.
That's true.
Yeah.
Grinnell was there for a little bit, too. And he, we've been working on this for a while. So you don't hang out too much with TFs, other TFs, do you?
No, well, we've been pretty busy on this thing.
Yeah.
When we first got started, it was this crazy idea that .NET, we could take that set of technologies that we've been working on for a long time, and we could help .NET developers transition and be able to use cloud capabilities. Mm-hmm. So we spent a lot of time out talking to developers who were building the next generation startups, scale out applications, and we asked them, what are the top things that you would like in order to help you? And consistently we got connectivity issues, we got identity and access control issues, and we got how do I kind of make my app extensible and be able to be for either third parties or for people that wanted to build on their existing application, how could they do that more easily? And so we identified these three services, I think literally the first month. I remember that dumb table that we had?
Yep.
So we kind of set out this plan 3 years ago, and we thought that these would be the three things that we should get started with, and it would be a good way to learn, understand how to do the scale out, and we've done now 12 releases prior to the PDC of that technology, so about over two
kind
and a half.
Stealth, low-key, kind of quiet way.
Right. Right? See. Yeah.
There's a bunch of developers who kind of have played with this in some form or another in the past.
Yeah, it was out on labs.biztalk.net.
Yeah, so we had this is the evolution of the labs.biztalk.net stuff. So if you're a developer that we're playing with it, this is going to be, basically you'll see a significant increase in the features as we move from that 12th release now, effectively into kind of the...
into the first real milestone, which... it's our PDC CTP.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's been fun. So, yeah. Now, Dennis, David, and I, we kind of started this thing. We've been working for a while. And then the team, as we decided that these ideas that we had done some incubation on, we had no idea what we were going to end up with when we first started.
I fully expected to be looking for a new job 6 months after we started.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was like that was kind of the expectation that we had, which was like, all right, this cloud platform, I mean, who's actually going to do this thing? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, let's give it a shot. It seems like it's a pretty viable thing. And in 6 months, we kind of figured out, just talking to a bunch of customers and developers, that this is something that a lot of people wanted. So.
Sure. Well, I mean, there already are cloud OSs out there, right? We have Amazon and Google's cloud computing store. You can call those cloud OSs,
but
not necessarily to this. Not 3 years ago.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So you were, but that's a good point. I mean, you had the idea that this would be important. It took 3 years to create it and ship it. And that's understandable. What I would ask, though, because it's a little confusing in the sense that where does WCF play in all of this? Is this just the glue that makes it all work or
well,
what?
Well, let's take a concrete example about where we use WCF. So the service bus, in WCF, we have these notions of channels and bindings. And a channel is really the communication conduit, and a binding is a way to describe the particular pattern of communication through that channel. So whether it's a one-way message or a reliable two-way message, those are different kinds of bindings that we'll do across that channel. We literally took the when you're accessing the service bus with .NET, we extended existing well-known channels like the standard HTTP mechanism, and we added what we call a relayed mode to that, which ensures connectivity. So the existing one works great if everybody's behind a firewall or everybody's got the ability to access a global name out on the internet.
Okay.
But if you've got two people behind firewalls or you want to talk to someone who's located behind a firewall, it just literally doesn't work. So by modifying WCF, by extending it through the standard extensibility points, we added this new channel, you can literally go in and just change the binding in the config. No code changes. Mm-hmm. And now
you start
you
using
can
the
get
service bus.
The service bus to help you ensure communication. So if you had an engineer at GE and an engineer at Boeing, they could talk to each other through the service bus without changing a line of code between their systems. What used to be an internal-only app can now become a secure cross-organizational app through literally just a set of config changes. So WCF and .NET really is the foundation for all of this. And the way I think about it is, when we first started .NET a while back, Brad and I and Mike Dutongi and a bunch of others, we had this idea that we were going to build a great environment for writing programs on Windows. Since then, we've stretched it to cover mobile with technologies like Silverlight. We've stretched it to cover things like the web with ASP.NET. This is the next big stretch of .NET, which is to move it out into cloud computing. And that consistent, common set of programming models that our developers have found to be easy to use and highly productive, that same set of skills is going to now become very easy to use to target cloud environments.
Absolutely. And
so it's all there.
Absolutely. Now, of course, it brings up an interesting point in the sense that it's not easy to bake the .NET programming model into, say, a typical general purpose operating system like Windows, right? So there's a reason why there's CLR isn't that far low in the stack. But when you're in the cloud and you talk about a cloud OS, it's easier because you have the service environment, right? You have this sort of the stateless world of the cloud. Can you talk about how it's going to scale?
Well, it's super interesting set of challenges. Let's take something like the service bus or the workflow system, any of these things. And there's a big difference between this kind of hosted fabric, if you will, and the servers that we have today. So let's just take workflow, probably the easiest one to think about. Let's say you wanted to run workflows at scale. What would you have to do? Well, you could take something like the Windows Workflow Foundation, which actually Dennis helped design, and he was one of the founders on that.
Nice.
And you could put it out on a virtual machine, much like Amazon does. But then you're owning the server. You have to set the server up. You have to make sure that the server's running. And now you have a couple of challenges. The first challenge you face is, well, how are you going to replicate these things to be able to handle thousands of workflows all running simultaneously? And it's probably not going to make sense to just put one workflow on each machine because you're not going to get a robust set of behaviors. And even if you did that model where it was just lots and lots of servers running, it would be a problem if one of those servers died, because you'd have to figure out how to fail it over. And so there'd be a lot of work that a developer would have to do to run servers up in the cloud. And that's the level at which, for example, an Amazon gives you the capabilities today. What we've done is we've turned workflow into a service, into a fabric that runs across thousands of nodes distributed around the world. I take my workflow and I simply hand it over to that cloud service and I say, run. And you don't worry about which machine it's on. You don't get charged for how many virtual machines you have up. You get charged when the workflow runs, and that's a tiny percentage of the time. And as your load goes up, we'll ensure that that thing scales up to more and more nodes. It keeps running. In the event that any of the nodes fail, it fails over. Now, here's the interesting thing. We use a collection of technologies behind the scenes, like SQL Server, to maintain the state on that. And SQL Services gives us a very scale-out state model. And so much of the .NET services, the access control, the service bus, the Windows workflow, all leverage these scale-out components in order to get that set of capabilities. So as we talked about, these things are all pretty interlinked, but in a loosely coupled way.
Excellent.
That's a pretty long explanation.
That's a great explanation. And we've covered the Azure already on Channel 9 with Wenavir.
Windows Azure.
Windows Azure, forget it.
Not the
main. Whole thing is, yeah. You know, and I won't comment on the name. I mean, that you guys came up with that, so right on. Not you guys.
Yes.
Certainly not technical.
Well,
fellows.
It's actually kind of funny.
Did you come up with that name?
No.
But there is a funny story.
So, all right, let's talk about it.
2.5 years ago, when I moved into this building, I started working with John. I came into my office, and I wasn't a big fan of the beige. So I came in on a weekend, and I went to Home Depot, and I picked up a can of paint. And the paint, because I was working on this cloud thing, and it was kind of crazy, was called Azure Blue. So 2.5 years ago, I came in, I painted my office Azure Blue, and people were like, well, what are you working on? I'm like, well, it's quite obviously the cloud. So, and then when I heard the actual name, I thought it was kind of, it's just full circle in some level.
Very cool.
Yeah, in fact, wanted to code name the project Azure back then.
Yeah.
And see, if you had done that, if we had named it Azure, then we wouldn't have been able to use that name now.
Exactly.
People would have been like, oh, that's a code name. Unless we named it something like...
Well, Windows 7.
Cloud 7. Yeah, exactly.
I actually like that. Cloud 7. That's cool.
Yeah.
We'll let our numbers next.
This is great, you guys. So, you know, just to in conclusion, let's talk really again. Give me yet another example to, you know, sort of stick it into my thick head. How do I use this? Give me another example. I know the Donbox thing that you can kill... You know, if you have a service running on your machine that you've exposed to the cloud, and we haven't really talked about how somebody does that, but and then you can use a service bus access control and kill processes on your machine. What's another example that you think would be really interesting?
Well, the example we're working on right now is
appliance one.
Well, we've got a program called Litware, and what Litware does is it lets you. It's an ASP.NET app that might have been hosted at a place like Rackspace, And it's we modeled it after some companies that are actually out there doing this kind of thing. It does online questionnaires. And those online questionnaires can be used for all kinds of different things. For example, doing compliance training at a corporation where you see a training video about some HR situation, and then you get asked a series of questions, and then you report that back to the HR people and said, you completed your training. Or it might be used by a company like AdventureWorks, which is a vacation adventure travel company, to show potential customers different kinds of vacations that they could go on, and then ask them questions about, is this the kind of thing you're looking for, and then it could make recommendations. So that's the basic idea. It's an ASP.NET app out at Rackspace today. They got all kinds of challenges that these different services could help with. So we can just go through a couple of those.
Yeah, please.
So the first one that these companies that have been doing this kind of thing have told us about is when they go to corporate customers, like when Litware goes to a company like Fabricam, which is a manufacturer, every Microsoft demo has got Fabricam in it somewhere.
Works. Contoso.
Contoso, yeah, we got that one too. So they're going to Fabricam, and Fabricam's like, look, I've got everybody on AD or maybe on Tivoli, you know, IBM's access manager, and I don't want all the people having to take our compliance training to have to create a new username and password and then try and correlate that back. How would we ever keep track of who's doing what?
I think the easiest way to say it is, like, Fabricam has a bunch of identities for each of the employees there, right? And they just want to, you know, keep those identities that exist in their company, and they want to be able to apply those identities to the app that they're just about to use. So it'd be great if they could go to this ASP.NET app and log in with their corporate identity.
Yeah. So,
absolutely.
So a quick little change is to take their existing app, ASP.NET, run it out at Rackspace, make a few changes to it to say, in order for somebody to access this test, go to the access control service and get an access control token. So that's just a couple quick lines of code that get changed in the Litware app. And then the access control service can do all of that directory federation with IBM, with AD, with Windows Live ID, and help pull it all together. And you can write rules up here about who's allowed to access what. So that's one good example.
Another example is so Litware goes and actually, let's say they're doing a survey or what have you. And one of the things the survey results need to be reported back to the people who maybe created the survey. Mm-hmm. So that's a couple of ways that could actually happen. But what they could do is actually say, when that survey is completed, I'm going to use the service bus and securely raise an event with the survey results, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm going to raise this event out in the service bus, and the company who contracted Litware to actually create the survey could be listening for that event. So there's a way that now that these two companies can communicate to each other, and they don't have to, set up holes in their firewalls and set up, these DMZ home servers and all these different types of things. They just say, I'm going to raise it there, you can listen for it, and then go from there, right? So that's another way that they can use both the access control service and the service bus service.
Yes, so that's actually one of the most common requests we get from people who are out building web applications, and they want to integrate, or they want to resell, for example, their business ISV, and they want to resell to a business, mm-hmm. which is, how do you talk to resources that are inside the corporation when you've got a hosted service? Mm-hmm. You want to be able to fire messages into the company, and you want that company to have a lot of flexibility about what they do with it.
Yeah.
And so what Dennis described is, when the test gets complete, you fire an event through the service bus. It uses a pub-sub kind of model, and organizations, as long as they have access to it, can listen to that event and do something. Concrete example in the Litware case, I complete the HR training. I want to stuff a record into SAP so that the HR people know that the test was complete. That's very easy to do. Litware just fires the event to the service bus, and then from Java, from Ruby, from C++, what you name it, you can write a program that listens to the event and then takes the data on that and puts it into the SAP. So there's another example of the kinds of things you might do with a service bus.
And of course, like most of the technologies that we create, which are you know, platform focused, targeted at developers and creative people, you know, you're not necessarily sure how this is going to be used.
That's
right?
The, yeah, that's actually that's one of the beautiful things. A handful of us built Windows Workflow Foundation, and we launched at PDC 2005. And a few months later, I was, you know, reading the blogs of people who had created different things with it. And this one guy had used Windows Communication Foundation in a way that we had never intended. Like, he'd hooked it up with his phone's and speech server so that he could phone up some computer somewhere and say, I want you to record whatever it is, Top Gear or some video. Yeah. And that would kick off a workflow in the background that would contact his TiVo to tell him to do all these different things. Right. So it's like, I never anticipated that somebody would use WebF this way. Mm-hmm. In the same way that, like, as we've, you know, kind of engaged with the community, we find people using the services in ways that we hadn't anticipated, are kind of, it's kind of nice to see how people to use that stuff. So
absolutely.
And then you could, you know, yell at us if it doesn't work.
Precisely. And, you know, you guys built interoperability from the beginning. Right? So the fabric is interoperable by design.
Yeah. That was one of the things we learned, we kind of internalized early on, is like, in order for you to be kind of a viable, you know, platform provider, you can't just lock, you know, you got to be able to support a bunch of different languages. My language of preference is C#, but I have a whole bunch of friends who love PHP and a bunch of friends who love Java, and I didn't want to limit them to use this stuff, so we do support all those different kind of things.
Yeah, it was actually interesting when we, when Dennis and I first got started putting these additional samples in. I remember we talked to a couple people and we started building these Java samples. And the initial reaction was like, what?
Yeah.
You're writing open source Java code and you're putting it out as as code? And there was a little bit of pushback, and we kind of went through all the channels and said, look, you know, we're showing people how to interact with this stuff, and there's been kind of this big groundswell of receptivity, even inside of Microsoft and from the community, to be able to connect up to these things. So we've seen now a bunch of open source projects that have been created to do the connectivity into this thing. So that's actually been fun to see that if with a little bit of pushing, you can get this stuff to be open.
Great.
Yeah.
Well, hey, you guys, thank you so much for taking the time to have this conversation.
Yeah, it's fun.
And,
thanks.
Look forward to seeing how people do that. Absolutely. Great work, you guys.
Thank you.
Hope you guys all enjoy it.
Yeah.
Right on. See ya.
See ya.
Bye.